We are beginning our Advent season. Today's the first Sunday of Advent. We started commemorating Advent here at Christ Center. It's been within the last 10 years, but the church as a whole has been doing it for many centuries. I'll say it's hard to do it in an American context. I mean, we grapple with it here because Christmas is this overpowering beast here in America. It started, I'm not sure, retailers, you know, just decided they could start making money by putting up their Christmas decorations after July 4th. And it's just overpowers everything else, right? Some of you guys have been singing Christmas songs for a long time. Shame on you. Okay, not shame on you. I just preached on shame. I don't actually mean that. But now you may sing them. It's fine. I honestly love Christmas, and it's hard to celebrate Advent because Advent is different than Christmas, but sort of happens here in the same season. Advent, the whole idea behind Advent is waiting for all the things that Christmas is going to bring. But Christmas already gives it to us because of the sprawl, right? So, you know, the lights are on our houses, the candy canes, the Hallmark movies, the gingerbread fields, you know, even the decorations on our stage. JCSD did that. Isn't that lovely? It's really pretty. But it's, I'm just saying, there's like that tension, right? There's that tension of like, there's Christmas and there's Advent. I love Christmas. We, you know, on these Sunday mornings, what we're trying to do is sort of, when we preach, is to push pause a little bit on the celebration and to enter into the waiting, even as we're clearly also celebrating. Do you see what I'm saying? There's this weird kind of tension here. We step back from this. Now, I love the Christmas thing. We just put up our Christmas lights and had all the music playing. It's my wife's favorite thing. She loves to do it, so we basically just do whatever she tells us to do, which is just every day anyway. But I really love and enjoy that. But what we do here, what we're going to do here this morning, is take off our candy cane goggles and choose to remember where we actually are, because the truth is, we don't live in a Hallmark movie. None of you are the perky, overworked city girl, and I'm not a pastry chef in a small town. I've never built a cabin in my life. So also, I'm not Santa. That's that too. Advent goes in another direction. We're not leaning into the sugar plum spice, you know. It's a season to pay attention to all the things that are still undone in the world, to pay attention to our aches, to pay attention to our unfulfilled heart cries. And it's a time to bring all those things to God and say, how long, O Lord? Advent, if you're unfamiliar with what this is, maybe some of you have never done this before, Advent literally means arrival. It's a combination of two Latin words, ad, which is to, and vent, which is to come. So if you're new, the way it works here is on the church calendar, we take these 4 weeks leading up, And every week we meditate on a different theme and light a candle. Today it's hope. Next week it'll be peace. And on the 25th, that's when Christmas actually begins on the church calendar. And Christmas isn't just a one-day thing. It's 12 days, which is kind of awesome. So it's not just one birth. Sort of like Easter. Easter's the same way on the church calendar. Easter is supposed to like keep going. You don't just celebrate with ham and then be done with it, which is great. Ham for weeks? Come on. That's not a bad thing. What we're doing in Advent is making a practice of waiting. We wait for two things in Advent. First, waiting for Christmas, right, is how we remember the arrival of Jesus. So in Advent, we do that. We contemplate the image of Mary and Elizabeth, both pregnant, both waiting, both expectant. I love that word for pregnancy, expectant. Elizabeth was expectant with a son who'd become a great prophet, preparing the way for the Savior of the world. Mary, expectant with the Savior himself. And indeed, all of their people had been expectant too. They've been waiting for centuries for the Messiah to come. And of course, he did come. He laid down his life and took away the sin of the world. So we remember that waiting. But in Advent, you know, it's on the basis of that faithfulness and that first coming that we remember the second thing, and that's that Jesus will arrive again. We remember his first arrival, and we remember that he will arrive again. He's promised to do so. He's promised to complete the work that he began, and we see a vision of his promise on the very last page of our Bibles, Revelation 21, 1 through 5. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first earth, the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and the sea was no more. I also saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared like a bride adorned for her husband. Then I heard in a loud voice from the throne, "Look, God's dwelling is with humanity, and he will live with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and will be their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. Death will be no more. Grief, crying, and pain will be no more, because the previous things have passed away." Then the one seated on the throne said, "Look, I am making everything new." Every time I read those words, you guys, they arrest me, you know? I feel a little lump in my throat. To wipe away every tear, for there to be no more death, no more pain, no more cancer, no more apraxia, no more rifts between parents and daughters and sons, no more broken planet, no more war, no more national blood feuds extending generation after generation, no more saber rattling from dictators threatening civilization with nuclear holocaust, creating a devastating future like the ones dictated in 1,000 post-apocalyptic feature films. They've taken over the imagination of a generation of artists. All that heartache, all that fear, gone. The very idea makes me ache, because those things are not gone, are they? They are our present reality. We live in a world that is infected with chronic violence and heartbreak. It touches us no matter who we are. I mean, you can be the person that the world most calls privileged. You could have all the money. You could be mega rich, mega famous. You could be loved and admired by millions of people. You can live on a castle in an island in the North Sea, and all of you have all your friends and families, and they're just beautiful. But still, pain is going to find you. You can't hide from it. Rifts will happen. Death will show its face. Nobody is immune. We're a long, long way, in other words, from John's vision of Christ's triumphant return. What Advent does is it shines a light on that fact, and it makes me uncomfortable. How about you? I don't like it. Advent puts us squarely between Christ's two arrivals, the one that happened and is celebrated around the world in Christmas pageants and on Christmas cards, and then the other one that were merely promised. You see, we are here in the middle of these two things, and we wait, and we wait. Are we foolish for waiting? But I mean, you have to admit, it's been a long time since there was no room in the inn, you know? It's been a long time since Jesus of Nazareth left, and he still hasn't come back, and this is, honestly, where many in our culture, perhaps some of you this morning, want to get off the bus. Because it's one thing, like everybody, you know, is okay with treating Jesus as a metaphor or a teacher. You know, we all like his ethics of elevating the outsider. We all like the way he treated those who were on the who were outcasts in society. You know, we like the stories of welcoming sons home and caring for those who've been beaten and left for dead. It's all very inspiring, and we should all do that. But it's another thing entirely to believe that Jesus was real, that he died and rose again, and that he's coming back. Like that's a whole different thing, isn't it? Like that kind of thing is, you know, it could sound a little weird. It's been a little while, too, even if you can get there with the incarnation and jive with what we believe as Christians. You start thinking, man, it's been 2,000 years, and he still hasn't come back. To hold on to hope that he's going to come back and going to fix everything Well, that's a heavy thing, isn't it? When I let my mind dwell on the fact that it's been 2,000 years, it makes me uncomfortable. And I think, God, what are you waiting for, you know? Why have you still not come back? Can you see it's kind of a mess down here? Can't you see the wars and the bloodshed? Can't you see the endless suffering? What are you waiting for? And when I think of that, I imagine our spiritual forebears. I think of the Israelites and how they had a promise. They were going to be a great nation. They were going to bless the whole world. And the descendant of David would sit on the throne forever. There's such grand promises for such a tiny nation, you know? And they held on to those promises and they believed that the Messiah was going to come and do these things. So imagine the confusion when the nation split in two. Imagine the heartbreak of seeing the larger nation, 10 of the 12 tribes, be completely annihilated and carried away by the Assyrians. Imagine the heartbreak and think, I thought we had a great thing happening. And then imagine that the remaining nation, Judah, is down there and they're waiting and they see this nation of Babylon come in and they see this general Nebuchadnezzar come in and wipe out their cities one after another until he lays waste to Jerusalem and burns down the temple and carries back thousands of captives hundreds of miles to Babylon. Imagine that disappointment and that confusion. And their captors certainly noticed the juxtaposition between their grand hopes and their current miseries. Psalm 137 gives us a glimpse of a conversation. Alongside the rivers of Babylon, we sat on the banks, we cried and cried, remembering the good old days in Zion. Alongside the quaking aspens, we stacked our unplayed harps. That's where our captors demanded songs, sarcastic and mocking. Sing us a happy Zion song. Oh, how could we ever sing God's song in this wasteland? Can you hear the pain in that? Can you hear the disappointment? Another psalm, Psalm 13. Gives a prayer that I imagine they prayed. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I take counsel in my soul and have sorrow in my heart all the day? How long shall my enemy be exalted over me? How long, O Lord? So they waited there, and most never returned. Their hope was finally realized. The Savior did come after 600 years. And we sit with them, see, in this parallel timeline. We look around at the human miseries. We see the juxtaposition between our grand hopes as believers and our current situation. Jesus says he's coming back. So we cry with them, okay, how long, O Lord? How long? I want to say to you, this is a very good prayer. It is an appropriate prayer when we see the tensions escalating in the Ukraine or the Middle East. How long, O Lord? When we turn on the news and we see yet another school shooting. How long, O Lord? The day that horrible diagnosis comes. How long, O Lord? When famines and earthquakes strike and sons and daughters are lost to drugs and suicide, how long, O Lord? This, friends, is Advent. We are waiting for the Savior to return, and we are crying out, how long? And as hard as it is to sit in this place, as painful as it is, uncomfortable it is, as depressing as it feels right now in this room, I think it also might be a good thing. You see, I think we know in our bones that humanity cannot rescue itself. We've tried so many times. Over and over again, we've tried emperors and kings. We've tried prime ministers and presidents. We've tried economic philosophies and medical strategies. We've tried armies and educators. We've raised up political candidates as saviors, and then they betrayed us. And when they fell, which they always do, we cried, how long? There is no cultural utopia that's coming for us, friends. Whether you're a Marxist atheist or a Christian nationalist, there is no utopia to be found. There is no personality, no political agenda, no tech breakthrough which will set the world right. All of them have disappointed us. So it's in this season of waiting that we remember that they disappointed us. We remember where our ultimate hope rests for the salvation of humanity, for the righting of injustices. Our hope rests only in the risen Christ. Our hope rests only in his triumphant return. And today is a good day to remember that. I say, let the idols fall. Let them fall. Let us remember it's only in him that our hope has ever really rested. This would be a very depressing sermon. But, I have a beautiful secret to share with you guys. And it's this. While we wait for our Savior's return in power, he is also already among us. He's with us even now. In this sense, we have a huge advantage over our spiritual forebears. He is here in this room. That's why we light the candle of hope, because we have hope. Hope is a person. And when Jesus left, when his body left this earth, he sent his spirit, the one who raised him from the dead, to dwell among us, to walk with us, to be our advocate, to be our counselor, to be our comforter, to bring miraculous breakthrough, to walk with us in disappointment when the breakthroughs don't come. All of those things, the Spirit of Christ is here, even as we wait for the full return. And that, friends, is really good news. Kathy Stott, ladies and gentlemen. Can always count on Kathy Stott to give the woo. Christ, though we wait for him, is here. And what's more, while we wait, he transforms us. Even in the darkness, he lights a candle of hope inside of us, and we become carriers of hope just like him. It is a beautiful, miraculous, very curious thing that takes place. I have to be honest, I don't care very much in the moment about being transformed when I'm waiting. I don't want to do that. I'd rather just not wait. Anybody else with me? Anyone else like Inigo Montoya, right? I hate waiting. We don't like it. But I've become pretty good at it over the years, to be honest. You guys know our story, most of you. We waited for many, many years. There were so many prayers that we prayed, that you prayed, that my son prayed. A lot of years right here where you saw him and blessed him and where we cried out, Lord, Lord, let him be able to speak. As he's walked with autism and apraxia, and we'd cried out for that. And well, there was no service that we could take him to that suddenly made anything snap, right? There was no just like prayer that suddenly, pow! People kept thinking that would happen, and it didn't happen. And in the waiting, something surprising took place in me. Something very surprising. Something I never saw coming, and that's this. God softened my heart in ways I did not know he could soften. I remember, I think it was actually maybe during Christmas when we're just watching TV and this commercial came on, this very sweet, very sappy commercial, and I found myself crying. I'm like, what is going on? I make fun of stuff like this. You know? What's happening? And it kept happening. And I just, there was a softening that began to take place. Now, I have a lot of issues, you guys. I promise, ask Janelle. Don't ask, please don't ask Janelle. Ask my wife, she might be a little nicer. Probably not, actually. I'm getting myself in trouble with everybody this morning. What am I doing? I have a lot of issues, but I'm so thankful for that softening. I'm thankful that there's things now that I'm able to do that I wasn't able to do, and that's to share a little bit of that, the presence of Jesus with other people that I wasn't able to share before. And I just would have never seen it coming. I used to just have this sarcastic edge. I was the supreme overconfidence and all these things. And there's so much of that has been blunted. Still pray for the sarcasm. We're still working on that. But so much of it has been blunted. And God's done some things in here. And it's entirely because I had to wait and experience this thing that I'm not used to as an American. I want to push a button and I want the burrito to be done. It doesn't always happen that way, does it? This is Advent. We have to wait sometimes. And sometimes we don't get the thing that we're asking for. Then what happens? We wait until the restoration of all things. So in the season of waiting, God does things in the dark inside of us. And I don't say that as a silver lining. Well, at least God's doing something in you. I'm saying, watch what he's going to do and work with him and believe that he's going to do that and believe that breakthrough can yet come. You guys know what's happened with this guy. The breakthrough did come last year in a way we never saw coming. And although he doesn't speak with his mouth, he speaks with letters, one letter at a time. And he has profound things to say. You're going to be able to hear a little bit of it in a couple of weeks. I can't wait. A meditation on joy that he's written. You can see the work of God does not happen like that. Sometimes there's delay, and we are there with him. He's with us in the delay, in the dark. And God will do surprising, very curious things inside of us. What a glorious surprise. What a glorious surprise is the breakthrough that God brought with Jackson. Friends, God works out there and in here, even in seasons of waiting. And I want to urge you, friends, if you're in a painful season of waiting, I urge you not to lose heart. Wait for him. We wait for the large-scale redemption of the whole world, but we wait for breakthroughs in our own lives when we press in. Joshua spoke in October on lament. If you weren't here, I urge you to listen. It was a wonderful sermon. We're big believers in lament here and bringing our pains to God. I want to say you have permission to do that. You have permission to lament. You have permission to cry out to God and say, how long, O Lord? You have permission to ask, why, O Lord? And why not? You have permission to scream at the heavens and throw rocks at the sky. You have permission to be confused and heartbroken. All of this is given to you by your Father. He can take all of it. You have permission to do it all, but one thing is forbidden you. You're not permitted to lose hope. Because Christ is in you. He is hope. Hope is a person. Your job is to hold on to the hand of hope, to grip it, even in the pain, to grip it and to not let go. Even in the midst of heartache, in the midst of waiting for Christ's return, the Apostle Paul urged us to wake up to what God is doing right now, Romans 13, 11 and 12, because this, you know the time, or besides this, you know the time that the hour has come for you to wake from sleep, for salvation is nearer to us now than when we first believed. The night is far gone, the day is at hand, so then let us cast off the works of darkness and put on the armor of light. This is while we're waiting to put on the armor of light. He is the light in the dark. He is the candle of hope. I love this old Advent hymn that goes like this. Hark, a thrilling voice is sounding. Christ is nigh, it seems to say. Cast away the dreams of darkness, O ye children of the day. O ye children of the day, that is us. How do you like that? Children of the day. I love that. You and I are the children of the day, so we hope, and we work with him to bring hope. The great preacher Fleming Rutledge tells a story in her sermon. It happened back in 1996 and was told in the New York Times. There was a cul-de-sac of houses over the holiday season that were lit and, you know, decorated, and most of them in the traditional way, but one was non-traditional. All there was a lit menorah in the window. Menorah, of course, is the candelabra that our Jewish friends light, the seven candles in commemoration of Hanukkah, which happens right in the same season. They had their Hanukkah candle lit in the window. And one morning, the neighborhood woke up to see that the window was smashed, the menorah was broken on the ground, and a swastika was painted on the people's wall. Neighbor went to them and talked to the man, who was really, really shaken up about the whole thing. Obviously, he's completely scared, not feeling safe in this community. And so the neighbor did something. She went to all the other neighbors and talked to them. And then she ran out to every retail store within 20 miles that she could find. And in a flurry of activity, she came back so that by nightfall, every house in that cul-de-sac had a lit menorah in the window. That is light in the darkness. What a beautiful, beautiful act of kindness that neighbor gave. Hark, a thrilling voice is sounding. Christ is nigh, it seems to say. Cast away the dreams of darkness, O ye children of the day. We are the children of the day. And during Advent, we don't shrink back from the darkness we see. Instead, we look toward the day Christ returns to eradicate it. And while we wait, we light candles. We light candles with our lives. And we burn bright for the sake of a world that has lost heart. Friends, Christ came. Christ is here. Christ is coming again. This is Advent. Christ will return victorious. Christ is our hope and our flame. Stand with me this morning.